Good afternoon. You are tuned to KDNK in Carbondale. It's about a minute after 4 o'clock. This is Valley Voices. I'm your host this afternoon on Valley Voices, Marilyn Gleason. And today my guest is Steve Kushner. He is the Roaring Fork Valley Coordinator for 350.org Colorado. Started that job last June, I believe, and we want to welcome him today. 350.org works across the globe and locally to end fossil fuels and transition to renewables in order to slow global warming and climate change. So pretty big issues. Welcome today, Steve Kushner. Glad to have you here.
Thanks. Wonderful to be here today. Excited to talk to you.
So we're going to talk about what you're doing in the Roaring Fork Valley, but also about the big picture. We do have some big picture. Climate change is always the big picture, right? But we do have some current news for sure, talking about climate change and 350.org. And first, you had a quote from Greta Thunberg, which maybe we'll start off with today.
Yeah, Greta Thunberg said, "It seems like money is the answer to everything. If this is true and the future of our planet depends on getting the largest, biggest, richest to make it a priority, how do we get from here to there? The big question is, what is capitalism?"
Okay. This interview does come at an interesting time, given that Donald Trump was inaugurated yesterday. And one of the first things that he did was pulled us out of the Paris Climate Agreement. The U.S. is still the biggest carbon dioxide emitter or biggest emitter of greenhouse gases in the world. So, Steve, what does this mean? What were we going to be doing in the first place for, you know, as a part of that Paris Agreement? And what does it mean that we're no longer in it?
Good question. Donald Trump never surprises us. He shocks us. He's always coming up with what we think he's going to come up with. And he just follows through on what he said he's going to do. So he has been making it clear. He's been threatening. And the way that he's gone about this is to scare people, just like we had Greta do there. She was very clear that money rules the roost. And Donald Trump uses that in a very powerful way. So what's going to happen with the pullout of the Paris Accord? Well, you know, there are every other country in the world is going to stay in the Paris Accord. United States may not, but at this point, it doesn't seem to matter much anyhow. We have to be citizens to fight back against what he's going to try and do in every accord that he's going to be pulling us out of.
And what were our responsibilities when we were in the accord?
Well, most of these accords' responsibilities are behind the scenes. They're really done in a manner where countries make agreements on what they're going to do as far as their use of fuels, the idea of transportation. Are we going to protect the oceans? How are we going to look at the big picture? So all of these countries are still going to do all that. And the bottom line is they're all investing mega bucks to do all these things. The momentum has already been placed. The train has left the station, and he can't stop that. So at these conferences, a lot of good things happen. But whether it's COP or the Paris Accord, it's going to go on. We're still going to have COP 30 next year.
Well, we are such a big player, and it's just a little disjointed when we have different administrations coming in and going out. It's very hard to deal with a big problem like climate change when you have a change of policy, a radical change of policy every 4 years.
Yeah, it can get to be tiresome. You go back to the 1970s, and things were happening back then, even back in the 60s. And every couple of years, we have a new administration. We had a movie just here in Carbondale Library all about the White House effect. And that was the George H.W. Bush administration. And he wanted to be the environmental chief. He saw that it was good for his polling numbers. But as soon as he was elected, he brought in people into his administration that were against the idea of the changes that needed to be done. Just like, again, it goes back to the money. And they always use this. It comes back over and over again that our economy could not change. We can't change right now. Let's think about it. Let's study it. And maybe in 10 years, we'll make that big change. And we know what Trump's going to do. We already see it. He said, what did he take? $1 billion from the oil companies, I think he said. So we know. We already know this.
Let's talk a little bit about 350.org, what it is, where it got started. And let's just refresh people's memory and my memory of, about the name. 350 has to do with the parts per million in the atmosphere of carbon dioxide. And that's where it got its name. Why 350?
Well, 350 started in 2007, 2008 with college students. They were upset about what they saw happening with climate change. And they had been reading a lot of books to get to that point. Some of the books that they were reading were The End of Nature and Enough, really explaining that we can't continue to grow and expand. The Deep Economy, that more is no longer synonymous with better. And the author of those books was Bill McKibben. So they grabbed Bill McKibben because of his knowledge and way of explaining things.
And he's a college professor.
Yeah.
A humble college professor.
Yeah.
Out in Vermont.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So Bill was definitely a Vermonter. And he started with this group of students. And within 1 year, they were doing huge, enormous actions around the country of 60 and 70,000 people showing up at actions. Of course, smaller ones, too. And, you know, the 350 nomenclature, the idea of 350 parts per million, that's really based upon what's going on in Mauna Loa in Hawaii and the place where they've been doing studies and measurements of that carbon dioxide in the air at the same location since about 1957 or 58.
Hmm.
So when that started to show that the numbers were 300 parts per million back then, and then, you know, what we call the tipping point, which is every time we start to engage in more and more fossil fuels, more and more coal, more and more oil, more and more drilling, the numbers just kept going up. And it's you know, this graph, and everyone's seen it. It just keeps showing that it's pointing up toward the north. And now we're at 400, approximately 27 parts per million. We passed through 350 back in the 1970s.
Mm.
So, you know, going through the 350 thing, I mean, we had back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, we had days of climate action, global work parties, climate impact days. We were moving forward on climate margins, standing up to XL Pipeline. If you remember the XL Pipeline, we started focusing on fracking, breaking free from fossil fuels, building local people power, which is what I'm doing now. And we've had climate marches. Again, you know, 2017, Trump withdrew from the Paris Accord. He's done it before. 350 helps, you know, create U.S. climate alliance back then. And we fight locally to stop oil and gas development near schools and neighborhoods. We still are working on this. It's never going to end, probably. And at the same time, we have hope and we have a lot of people on our side. So that's the beautiful part.
Let's talk a little bit about that tipping point. You know, I mean, I've been doing some work on radio for 25 years about climate change. And I think it's been well understood all that time that carbon dioxide, you know, was going to affect the climate, that it's really slow moving. It builds up and depletes very slowly. So, you know, we've been getting locked into future climate change for a long time. And there was that understanding that sometime we're going to hit into this, we're going to hit this tipping point where the changes become catastrophic. Where are we with that tipping point? Have we, you know, we are starting to see some pretty wild weather events, and I've certainly heard it said in the last couple of years that maybe we're already there.
Yeah, that's such a great question, because tipping points have been studied now for a number of years. The reality of the situation is that once a tipping point is reached, it's really hard to go back in the same direction that you came from. Once that tipping point goes into the next step, then we start to see these things where ocean temperatures get up to a certain point. They hit a tipping point, and then the ocean cannot absorb the kind of heat that it did before. So that heat is given up into ideas of hurricanes and extreme storms, and that's why we're seeing those kinds of things now. Once the ocean reaches that point, it's game over on some level. And of course, a lot of people are thinking it's game over. I hope it's not game over, and I believe it's not game over. And I think that with human ingenuity, we can probably turn this around in the next couple of years. But, you know, whether it's the ocean being heated up or other areas of the globe that are showing points of coral reef bleaching, where we have issues where the water itself is showing methane in it now, and that's because of the tipping point in the Arctic. The melting of the permafrost is a tipping point. This is releasing methane into the environment. Methane is much quicker to dissipate. I don't mean quick, but it's quicker than carbon dioxide. But it's also, and I don't remember the exact, but it's about 70 times, and I may be off on that by a factor of something, more of a greenhouse gas that's going to hold more heat into our planet.
And that was 70 times as powerful of a greenhouse
gas. Yeah, and
gas.
Again, if I was looking at the answer on a test, I wouldn't necessarily write that in. So please look it up.
Right.
But methane compared to carbon dioxide is a huge, huge tipping point.
So
it's
there,
bad enough.
There have been some of these positive feedback loops, like methane getting into the permafrost melting, methane getting into the ocean becoming unable to absorb more heat, that maybe were unexpected. I mean, I think back in those days, you know, I remember a time when people were more skeptical about climate change, and a lot of the predictions that were going on were very careful and conservative because nobody wanted the backlash if we overestimated. And it seems that maybe in trying to be really careful about not overestimating, we really miss some of these positive feedback loops and really, intense climate change that were coming our way.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think, a lot of times we tend to listen to the experts, and the experts have the microphone, and they're the ones who say that you don't want to go too fast. Like I said earlier, that these leaders, these people who are running these multinationals, don't want anything to change that quickly. You know, the oil companies knew back in the 50s and the 60s. There are papers written that have been, requested and have been made public. And they're not going to necessarily admit that they were lying to us back then. But I think most people that look at this in the big picture know that they were lying.
I'm speaking to Steve Kushner on Valley Voices today, and he is our Roaring Fork Valley coordinator for 350.org Colorado. So we are talking about carbon dioxide and climate change today. Steve, where have we made progress? Where have we done a good job transitioning from fossil fuels to renewables?
Well, yeah, sure. We've gone from a couple of percentage points of the total energy usage just in this country alone of solar. I hate to talk about wind right now because I know that I was reading today that Donald Trump is outlawing wind energy and wind turbines off of the coast. But we have been working on many, many different technologies. So solar, of course, everyone's familiar with. We are definitely in a positive direction when it comes to technology. Computers, of course, have helped us in regards to figuring out the future when it comes to fission energy, when it comes to fusion energy. These are things for the future, but they're not that far in the future anymore. And the amount of investment and the amount of knowledge that's being, and the amount of brain knowledge, the amount of people, the engineers, the scientists, they're brilliant. And of course, AI may be a large energy drain, but it also does have a lot of benefits in regards to being something that really pulls it all together and points us in the right direction. So I feel pretty positive going forward to get away from oil and gas. But they've proven that they are going to fight for every nickel.
Let's talk a little bit about nuclear if we're going down different paths. You know, I've been in places listening to smart people who really believe nuclear is a possible answer to some of our climate problems because we don't get the carbon dioxide and the climate impact out of nuclear energy.
Well, I'm not an expert. I wouldn't call myself an expert on nuclear because obviously to know everything about everything wouldn't be one person. That's why we have organizations. But what I have heard recently, and it made a lot of sense to me, is that we've had nuclear energy supplied submarines for many, many years, 50, 60, 70 years now. We've had accidents, but we have also had the usage of small nuclear reactors that were able to run a submarine for 6 months under the water. So that tells you that it wasn't just the battery backup, but it was the use of nuclear energy to be able to do that. We also have possibilities for the future because, again, the money that's going into that technology and these new mini reactors are something that we at least have to consider. And when I look at all of the above, that's what I kind of mean. I mean, I think our main thing is conservation, to use solar, to get people to less, you know, to do less driving, to be able to get EVs more integrated into our economy for transportation. But nuclear is certainly an opportunity for people to look into, and I wouldn't be against it.
So what is RoaringFork350.org doing right here in the Valley? What are some of your goals and activities here?
So I came on board in June. We've had a number of other coordinators here, and they've been working now for a number of years. We are working presently and following up on things that they have been doing. For instance, the Uinta Basin in Utah has a desire to build more lines and come through the Colorado I-70 corridor by using freight trains that are going to be 2 miles long.
Yeah, that was the Uinta Basin Railway, Uinta Basin Oil Train. And that was a big win.
It was a
big
win
for us.
Just
back in December. What happened?
Yeah. So after the initial approval by some of the local organizations, some of the local commissioners, and they thought that they had it moving in the right direction. The long and the short of it is that they really didn't do a good environmental study of it. And we looked at the National Environmental NEPA, right, which stands for the Protections Act. And we're looking down the line on these railways that there could be accidents from here all the way down to the ports in Louisiana. So we were able to stop that by going through the court system. But then in Utah, there's so much money and power behind these shale oil companies and businesses that they were able to get the Supreme Court to hear the case. And that was just done in December. So there'll probably be a Supreme Court ruling on that sometime in April or May. Even if it does go in their favor, we can still fight it. And thank God for the legal justice system that we have in this country. So that's one big thing we're working on. Many, many other aspects of what we do here in the Valley. And there's always issues here in the Roaring Fork. So a big thing we're working with is, you know, protect our winters. A couple of years back, we did a big event at Aspen Mountain, and we called it not being able to have snow, to ski without snow. And people were saying that the trails had never been so difficult. They said a black diamond turned into a double, triple diamond to have no snow.
I guess. It's heck on the skis, too.
Yeah, really hard for everyone involved, and especially for the Aspen Ski Company. So, you know, we do have support from organizations like that to help bring awareness to what's happening. What we do here, because we are in a volunteer position right now, we're getting more volunteers. We're getting more energy. We just had a meeting the other day. We had over 40 people at that meeting. It was phenomenal. We had, coming out of that, it doesn't sound like a ton of people, but 7 people want to get on the volunteer board. That's huge. If we can get a couple of hours from each one of those people, that's full-time staff. That's 35 hours, 40 hours.
Great.
Yeah.
And was that pulling together some of the different different organizations around the valley? And
yeah, I'd love
I know you expressed to me that you're interested in kind of getting, you know, there's so many different groups and so many nonprofits in this valley, and a lot of them devoted to the environment and getting all that energy kind of working together.
No, totally. We're doing something with the Western Colorado Alliance. Indivisible is now 22 people strong here in this region. The Wilderness Workshop is a big part to play here. Uproot, and of course ourselves, the Cook Inclusive Company, Planned Parenthood, PFLAG. These are areas you can ask us who they are, and we can put you in touch with them depending upon what you're interested in. But a big one, too, is Ceasefire Now of the Roaring Fork Valley. Great organization, and they're working to not only stop the war in the Middle East, but wars all over the world, because wars are some of the worst environmental catastrophes that we see anywhere on the planet. Mm-hmm. So we had, I think it was 11 or 12 tables set up, and this was a great meeting.
So where was this meeting, and what was it?
This was at the library, Carbondale Public Library, the 15th of January. The night before, we showed the presentation for the first time in the valley of the White House Effect, which was that story I was telling earlier.
That was a film?
Yep, that was a film, and we were given that from the, it's called the Hollywood Climate Film Forum. And we have dozens of film forums around the world about the environment, and we're getting permission from them to show films here in the valley.
So you're interested in having a documentary film series aimed at addressing the climate crisis?
Yeah, so we've been doing that all last summer. We had 7 films, each one on a different topic. Each one was about an hour and a half, and each film was an average of 20 to 30 minutes. And then we had an opportunity to discuss these particular films.
And this is all happening at the Carbondale Library?
Mainly at the Carbondale Library. Yeah, they're so wonderful over there. What a great place.
I think I got an email from you earlier, and you were kind of putting the feelers out there if people wanted to kind of get involved with this documentary series and in especially suggesting films that we might be seeing.
Yeah, so 2 things. Of course, you'll have contact to 350 Colorado, Roaring Fork Valley, Steve at 350colorado.org. What we're working on now also, which is very exciting, is the idea of an online film festival, basically a watch parties. And these can be run first by us, by the 350 organization here in Colorado. But then if people like the idea, they can run with it. We can give them films and they can reach out to their friends and people they know and start to expand on this. And I imagine this is being a tipping point of films.
You've shown some of these films at Sopris Lodge, which is where some of our elders live. Is this true?
Yeah. So what we did at the Sopris Lodge, which was great, we showed a 60-minute PowerPoint, and it was divided into 5 short 5-minute films with 5 follow-up minutes of conversation. We had Q&As. We had a question and answer to see if people knew things about what was happening in the environment. And we had a great time there, and would love to be invited back to more facilities where we have elders and seniors and people that have more time and energy to put into this. Would love to do that. And then if I can mention that we also are working with the Basalt High School Environmental Club, and we're working on early stages also with the Roaring Fork School District to bring in the idea of nonprofit interaction and activism. And last thing I'll say is I just spent time at the community college up at Spring Valley talking to their group there, and they're involved with sustainability and the economy. So to bring it all together is education, bring these groups together, and just exciting times that we live in, and threatening times too. And that's when we do the best work.
Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety among young people about climate in particular, mm-hmm. and their future. What do you have to say about that? And how are you addressing that working with young people?
It's a great question. I mean, my background is in healthcare. I was a holistic healthcare practitioner. There's a lot of technology out there to help us work individually. Things like Luminate, which is an app that you can use to help you relax and sleep at night. Working with learning is the best thing, though. Education, watching these videos, talking and getting involved. There's nothing worse than sitting around and just angsting on the couch or getting angry but with no outlet for it.
What are the best things that people can do right now to work for a better future and to get involved with some of the work that you're doing?
So tomorrow night we're going to have a really great invite that we're giving. We have 75 people right now on a call. You can, again, send an email to steve@350colorado.org, and I'll hook you up with this. You can be invited to this event. And we're going to be going through really what happened last year and what's happening going forward this year, all the steps that we have in place that you can help us climb.
Mm-hmm. And how can people reach your organization again?
Yeah, so we have a website. Of course, 350colorado.org. You can go on there and see what we're doing. Connect in with not only myself, but all the Front Range people that are involved as well. Other than that, I mean, that's probably the best way. We have a Facebook page. We have a website. We're doing everything we can to give people an opportunity to join.
Any other words of inspiration here before we head on to Bird Talk?
Yeah, I'm going to close my eyes for a second, and I had a visual today. I was looking out my office window, and I saw all the snow around, and I imagine that the environmental movement that we're trying to create is like a snowball, and we're at the top of the mountain here, and as we roll that snowball down the mountain and we pick up flakes along the way, sorry about that to all of you that don't think they're flakes, we pick up more and more flakes, and as we get to the bottom of this mountain, we hit the valley. And in the valley, that snowball starts to melt and creates this beautiful lake surrounded by all of our animal ancestors and our animal friends. And we start to see the growth come back of our environment through everyone pushing this snowball together, giving it a little momentum, and then watching it take off. All we have to do is get it together.
All right. Thank you so much. That was Steve Kushner. He is the Roaring Fork Valley Coordinator for 350.org, Colorado. Lots of events going on and lots of ways that you can get involved. And this has been Valley Voices. I'm Marilyn Gleason. Thanks so much for listening.